Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The war in Ukraine is less than 2 years old, yet political divisions among Ukraine's key Western allies are threatening to delay or derail the supply of weapons and funding that Ukraine needs to defend itself. Well, for more on this, I'm joined in the studio by the Director of European Studies at Maynooth University, John O'Brennan, and on the line by law lecturer at the University of Galway, Larry Donnelly. And you're both welcome. Thank you for being with me today. Larry, I'm going to start with you because we know the US Congress failed to agree this new funding round for Ukraine. That happened before Christmas. Joe Biden, though, did release some funds just before the new year. So what is the current situation from that side?
Well, yes, Biden has released about $1 billion that was left in the pot, so to speak, of monies that had been approved by Congress. But now we have a situation where there's a stalemate, where Republicans are saying, look, we are not going to release any more funding, not just for Ukraine, but also for Israel, unless funding is put into border security. And I think this really reflects the inward pivot of the Republican Party in the United States to a more isolationist point of view. They really don't care all that much about Ukraine. And indeed, the public mood in the United States has drifted away, not because I think they're unsympathetic to Ukraine, but they're overwhelmed by problems at home.
And is this divided then along those party lines? So you have Democrats saying, yes, let's fund this, and are Republicans unanimously saying, no, we've had enough?
Yeah, Republicans seem to be pretty much on the same page. Democrats take the opposite view, though it is interesting that in the last vote on this topic, Bernie Sanders voted with the Republicans because he is disturbed by the conduct of Israel against Gaza. So this is a really, really tricky negotiation. As Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Senate, has said, finding the middle ground is exceptionally hard. And how long this is going to take to get something done is anybody's guess. But again, the Republicans are dug in because they think they're onto a political winner here, and immigration is a huge issue for them. The only difficulty for them is that among the evangelical right in particular, funding for Israel is a huge deal. And the longer they forego holding up aid to Israel, that could bite them as well.
So can a deal be done then in Congress? What do the Republicans want on immigration in order to get this over the line, for President Biden to get it over the line?
Well, they want a range of really tough measures. They want to deport people more quickly. They want to end some of the more humanitarian ways of dealing with people at the border. So a whole raft of security measures that they say, look, the border is out of control. We need to worry about our problems at home. Ukraine is very, very far away. And I think, again, politically speaking, they think that's a winner for them, and particularly with their base. And indeed, immigration, of course, in the election year is going to be a very big issue, and it's one Republicans think they can use to their favour.
Okay, well, John, let's look at this from the EU perspective. People who listen to the show will know that just before Christmas we were talking about Viktor Orban's blocking of EU funds for Ukraine at that point. So where is that at now?
Well, I think it's just as difficult as the United States. As Larry has pointed out, Orban blocked a total of 50 billion euros that had been potentially provided by the EU to come out of the longer term EU budget up to 2028. So that blockage meant that money could not be delivered to Ukraine. And it was meant to help Ukraine with financing its institutions, literally paying wages of teachers and doctors and nurses and so on over the next few years. And it was supposed to give certainty to Ukraine. So what has happened in the meantime is there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing between the institutions and across the member states. And there is a proposal now that 20 billion euros would be borrowed by the European Commission, essentially from the member states, from some member states, to provide at least what Ukraine would need in the short term. Ukraine needs about 18 or to 20 billion from the EU this year. That's roughly what it got in 2023 as well. So there's a big summit meeting coming up on the 1st of February, and the hope is that they will at least have agreed that. But it doesn't really solve the longer term problem that we've got, where you've got a spoiler, in effect, Putin's proxy within the EU, Viktor Orban, that can come along and scupper any collective EU attempt to support Ukraine. And it's absolutely vital, Claire, because we've seen over the last few days that Ukraine has been subject to a barrage of missile attacks overnight against Kyiv and Kharkiv. And the difference between this and a year ago is, a year ago the Russians were targeting critical infrastructure. Now they are openly targeting civilians.
Yeah, just going back to Viktor Orban for a moment. So how ideologically driven is he? Because we saw before Christmas, well, he was given more money. Ursula von der Leyen said, here, you can have this money. And some people said, this is outrageous. He hasn't carried out the necessary reforms and he's got this cash. And he seems to do this thing all of the time where he pushes and pushes against the EU. Then he gets what he wants and he settles down a little bit again. So what I'm asking you really is, can he be bought here?
Well, the answer to that, I think, is yes. He's been a very clever and wily operator since he came back to office in 2010. Time and time again, he has done what he did at the European Union summit in December. My argument is that this is a kind of cancer that has been allowed to develop within the EU, where you have a government that has completely trashed the rule of law and the conventional institutions that define how politics works, and the EU has done nothing about it. In fact, it's actually given in to him where it's really mattered. Now, there are mechanisms there, I think, that could be used. There is a mechanism under Article 7 of the EU treaty, whereby the voting rights of Hungary could be taken away potentially in the Council of Ministers. Now, the problem here is it would require all of the other 26 member states to agree to that for it to happen.
Was there an attempt to trigger that in the past, back in 2018?
Exactly. The European Parliament has the right to ask for this, and that's exactly what it did in September 2018. There was an Article 7 procedure instituted against Poland as well under its previous government. But the problem is that when it progresses to Part 2 of Article 7, it requires unanimity. Now, at the time, Poland supported Hungary and Hungary supported Poland, so we couldn't get the EU26 in agreement. Now, we have a new government in Poland that's potentially a game changer, but there are governments like that of Italy and Slovakia, and it's thought that they would be less than keen to support a movement like that because they fear that they potentially could be subject to it themselves in
so
the future.
In the meantime, while all of those problems are being ironed out, what happens to Ukraine?
Well, Ukraine desperately needs external financing. It's got that over the course of the last year to the tune of about 120 billion or something like that from the European Union with the United States. It also desperately needs ammunition. There's a desperate shortage of ammunition. There's an EU plan to supply a million artillery shells to Ukraine by March 2024. But yet we have fallen way short of that. Only about 500,000 of those shells have been delivered. And they are vital if they are to respond to the kind of Russian attacks that we've seen in recent days. So I think the upcoming summit in February will be absolutely critically important. And in addition to that 20 billion, I think we will see some of the member states unilaterally deciding to give both more military aid and also more financial aid to Ukraine to try and plug the gaps and get around the Orban veto. Mm-hmm.
Do you think, Larry, to bring you back in here, that the United States, apart from Joe Biden and the Democrats, that the rest of them will be saying, over to you, EU, this is your problem, you pay for it?
That's a very big part of the sentiment that undergirds the Republican Party, that this is a European problem. And more broadly than that, there's a sentiment among the American people that, look, for many years, American interventions in the Middle East in particular have been futile. They've only made things worse. And indeed, if you look at Ukraine, they're saying, what are we going to put this money into? An endless stalemate. So for a lot of them, they're going to say, look, Europe, you sort this out. We have enough to worry about here. And that's the sentiment that Republicans are banking on when they say, look, cease the funding here. And also, I think it should be said that on the far right, there still remains some sneaking regard for Putin, which is tragic.
Mm-hmm. And that may increase and it may become more important to consider towards the end of this year if Donald Trump wins the election, as the polls predict he will.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why, I mean, look, if something doesn't get done imminently, I fear for what's going to happen in the region, because certainly if Donald Trump were to win the election, apart from his bluster about being able to sort the thing out in 24 hours, it certainly is not going to be good for Ukraine. So action needs to happen here. But again, Claire, the problem is most Americans just aren't focused in on this. It's almost yesterday's news. It's very sad to say that. But it's not that they're opposed to Ukraine. It's just something that a lot of them have put in the rearview mirror. And indeed, with what's happening in Gaza, that's probably dominating more of the foreign policy headlines there. So all of this combines to a situation where it's just not good for Ukraine, and the horrible scenes we're seeing look like they're going to continue to play out.
So given that that's the conversation happening in the United States, John, the EU needs to have a serious conversation about how it defends itself now, particularly if we look at what might happen in November 2024 in the American presidential election.
Absolutely. Donald Trump has said more than once that he wants to take the United States out of NATO. You remember that during his presidency, he continually griped that the Europeans weren't paying their way. Actually, most European states now have substantially increased their spending on defence as a result of the Ukraine attack. That won't be enough for him. I am convinced that if Trump is re-elected, he will take the United States out of NATO. Now, what does that mean in practice for the Europeans? They've been defended by the United States essentially since NATO was founded in 1949. So for the first time in 70 years, Europeans are going to have to think about how do we defend ourselves? And this becomes absolutely acute if the Russians were to prevail in Ukraine, because Putin has said again and again that the Baltic states don't have a right to be independent. There are real palpable fears in the Baltics and in Eastern Europe about what Russian aggression might mean. And of course, Putin is waiting this out until Trump comes back, because there's a much greater likelihood that he will get what he wants under a Trump presidency. So there's a great danger there, but it's not confined to the US. In Europe, we're facing critical elections in June, the European Parliament elections. I am convinced we're going to see a surge in far-right support, especially in France and Germany, and they have the largest number of seats amongst the different contingents. So that's going to add another level of complexity and challenge for the EU as it goes forward and tries to cope with a new Trump presidency potentially.
And Larry, do you agree that that is what Donald Trump will do if he gets into the White House again, is pull America out of NATO?
I think there's every possibility of that. I think that the bottom line is Donald Trump is an isolationist. I think that is the dominant mood in thinking in the United States. I do think there is a bigger question here, and this is not to side with the far right or indeed with Donald Trump. But I do wonder the question that a lot of Americans are asking is, if we continue to fund Ukraine, what exactly are we funding? Are we funding perpetual war and endless taking of life? And I know some time ago, Sabina Higgins got an awful lot of criticism for saying, you know, people need to get around a table. But at the end of the day, that's the only way this is ultimately going to end. And how long is this war going to go on for?
Is that view being expressed in Europe as well, John?
Not in a serious way, I would say. And I don't think it's a very legitimate view at this point in time, because the Russians kind of cleverly have floated proposals from time to time, including just before Christmas, that Putin was ready to negotiate. He is not ready to negotiate. He is a predator of the highest order. And that's the way Europeans and the United States should think of him and deal with him accordingly. There is no way the Russians are going to negotiate in the near future. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody who thinks that is just kidding themselves.
But you heard what Larry said. You know, Americans are asking that question, like, what are we funding? Perpetual war.
Well, I think we need to see this through a larger prism, Claire, a global one. There is this extraordinary battle going on between the democratic world led by Europe and the United States against the autocracies, principally Russia and China. And China has been directly helping Russia in this confrontation with Ukraine, because it sees it as a proxy for their battle with the West in particular. So whether we look at national elections in the US, in Europe, or the European elections, we need to think about it in that wider context, that it is an existential battle between these forces of democracy and authoritarianism.
All right, well, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you both very much. That's John O'Brien and Larry Donnelly. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.